we thought it would be a good opportunity to talk about this notion of affluenza and some of our topics going forward, maybe less specifically about legal tactics, but more about what it is to be raising family in wealth and in affluence, and what are the positives and what are some of the risks. And so today's topic is affluenza, which is an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. Frankly, it's much more than an ounce. It's probably a pound of prevention or pounds of prevention for a potential ton of risk. So where does affluenza come from? It was a term, at least, that we believe that was defined in the case with Anthony Couch, who was intoxicated, an individual of real wealth, was intoxicated, driving on a restricted license, speeding in a residential area where he lost control of his car, colliding with people who were assisting another driver of a disabled SUV. Four people were killed. We would typically say that this individual should be going to jail and they should throw away the key. But with able counsel, the charge of 20 years in jail was reduced to 10 years of probation because capable counsel before Judge Gene Boyd sentenced Couch to 10 years of probation and was moved by the argument that the teen suffered from affluenza and that he needed rehabilitation because he was raised in an environment that didn't fully appreciate what was truly reality and was always responded to by receiving whatever he requested or needed and never really understood what consequences could mean. The overwhelming majority of the U.S. would probably radically disagree with that. And frankly, we as attorneys would also consider that as some extreme argument. But now for two generations representing people who are often first generation wealth, as one of our clients' parents said, grandparents said, you know, John, raising children in an affluent, extremely affluent community is incredibly hard. And it's hard because you want your children to suffer the struggles that the disproportionate majority of the population is suffering, having to postpone when they are looking for a certain gift, having to work in order to supplement their standard of living, having to hear the words no when they're requesting either a new car or a certain private school or a certain vacation or a certain camp that their friends are going to. And when you're in this wealthy community that the ultra-affluent live in, you don't hear much of the no. And parents rationalize this, and not wrongly, because they really know no better if it is first-generation wealth. They know the struggles they've had, and they view that if they can raise their children without the struggles, their children will have a better life. They will feel good as parents for that. But often it is in the struggle where real growth takes place. And as parents, part one is acknowledging that with affluent children, but part two is actually digging in and making that happen. Because in many respects, if you have the resources and you have the time and you want nothing but the best for your children, you will say yes. Saying no and having them wait is much harder than saying yes. And when you're working 14-hour days, to say no to your child, even though you clearly have the resources, is even harder. The result, however, is that we see and we continue to see that the next generation may not possess the same fully appreciated notion of what wealth is and how fortunate they are. And accidents where a child kills four people and gets off on the basis of that they, it wasn't really reality that this child had, could become more the case, although how profoundly disconcerting that seems to be. What can we do? Well, I think the first piece is to continue to be focused on the risks that occur and identify opportunities where a change of thought and heart could be. As trust attorneys, two things we've said forever to our clients is the trust will first protect your child from him or herself. The trust will second protect the child from others. And we have taken the approach that spend the time trying to teach your child to protect them from themselves. And then part two, assist that child with structures and discipline so that they can be protected from others. Protecting from themselves goes to the issues of hard work, thrift, industry, postponing gratification for a longer-term goal, enjoying things in life that don't necessarily cost money, whether it's a hike or a run or a board game or volunteering at the community center, the YMCA, one's church or temple or mosque, and seeing the value of doing things where relationships are more important than the next and most recent shiniest object that our child or children may be chasing. So with that, number one on our list is a reality check, which is discipline your child by enforcing consequences when they break rules and give responsibilities such as chores. My wife Rosemary is a perfect example of focusing on that in our family and many others as well by having responsibilities for our children and having them be accountable, because really at the earliest ages of childhood, when the child is fully self-aware as one can be at that age, giving them responsibilities makes them not only feel good but when they've accomplished it, but continues a pattern of being accountable. So this is one key piece. Furthermore, punishment. And we use the word punishment because there's surely a greater way to structure that, whether we talk about time out, but those require as much hard work for the parents as it does for the child. And certainly we, none of us are experts at this. We leave that to the childhood and rearing experts. But structure is an important thing, not just for raising your child in a community that is of modest means, but even more so when your child will have significant means. So many of our clients have the battle, do we even talk to our children or demonstrate to our children that we have wealth? One client joked remarkably that our children said when we were flying on business class, wow, we didn't know that you could actually fly with other people on a plane because they were so used to flying privately. Other clients have just spoken about examples where their children were always accustomed to going to the front of the lines at certain theme parks or tour groups because there were always guides that brought them to the front. And what did that do to create an unrealistic impression of the world? So number two is better to give than to receive, focuses on kids in their philanthropic giving. and having them volunteer for charitable organizations. For many of our clients who created foundations, they have captured the idea that we want our children to acknowledge and accept the importance of giving back. The old expression of time or talent or treasure starts with the foundation making gifts to certain charities and having the children embrace these organizations as places who are in need, but also donating time, which when children are young, they can't fully appreciate what it took to earn the dollars to then deposit the dollars into the foundation to manage that with highly qualified professionals and then make a distribution. They can appreciate more if they've got to spend 8 or 10 hours on a particular charity in one given day and maybe do that for a week or a month over a period of years. The idea of giving back isn't just the hard work, but it really gives the child the opportunity to immerse in the lives of those who are struggling. Years ago, one of our children said, "I did this project because I knew someone else," and she gave the name. Life would change. What I didn't expect as she broke down was what it would do for her and how it changed her life. And so I think the importance here is that we are giving our children exposure, which could be a world easier than trying to create this reality just inside of our home as we take them out. In the New York metropolitan area, there is a group called The Bridges Run, and one of my daughters, and we went on this project and handed out sandwiches and spent a day with people of abject poverty, at least comparatively speaking to the rest of the New Jersey community. Those types of things just continue to remind us and why all of the young children today are moving towards a notion of greater social change. So we're giving them that opportunity as well. As we go on, therefore, we move to number three on our topic, which is money can't buy happiness. Indeed, it can make life significantly better. It is a goal to seek for our clients, and they have all achieved that. But for sure, the idea of having activities that are not necessarily money related bring a greater sense of peace. If you travel to Europe or Asia, where there are dynastic wealth, we learn a lot about humility and the notion of great appreciation in the generations of wealth that go on 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 generations, where there is this sense of appreciation and humility and that they were fortunate that the lottery of life landed where they are on them in a positive way. It is a struggle for particularly Americans who are only first and maybe second generation, who have not mastered the idea of being able to balance time and work and professional responsibilities by also creating a structure. So there's almost this pent-up money that then hits their children without a tremendous amount of history from the time that they were young about how privileged they are because the money is so new. So involving them sooner in activities that are not driven by money, but on time and happiness and in relationships can go a long way so that we as trust lawyers, our job then continues to be on focusing on protecting our clients and our loved ones from others, less about protecting our clients from ourselves. So, and this moves us to number four, which is patience. And so, as we continue to have our children focus on postponing and abstinence and the idea of foregoing now, this builds character and discipline in them, part one. It also strengthens them when they're in relationships with others. Having children of college education as clients, the clients, both the children and their parents speaking about their time in college, we're learning a lot now about people jockeying for relationships with our clients' children, both while they're in college and in both romantic and in just platonic and social relationships, because they see this group of people on a track to success because there's a family history of affluence. And the result is that the children, if they're not mindful of this, may be the object of abuse or manipulation or of disingenuous relationships with friends that they have both in school and when they enter early into the professional world. We're learning that while the people on this call have been privileged to pay for college on their own and are looking for strategies to pay for even friends and family and even grandchildren, the overwhelming proportion of children in colleges are on some kind of financial aid because they represent the top 95% of the population. And so when your child is going in and not racing to the financial aid door, or is coming in with a nice car, or is saying, you know, I'm flying home for a holiday when others are not, or we're scheduled for a vacation X, Y, and Z, that is sending a message to their friends that maybe there is a different financial class there. It's nothing that we can change. It is the way life has been, and it's the result of hard work and risk-taking and good luck that their parents have had, and extended family and even grandparents. The issue, however, is that the children have to be mindful that this exists. And that's part two to where trust work, which is to protect children from others. And the trust gives them that advantage. It's very common for us when you call and reach out and say, my child is getting married, my child wants to buy a home, we were going to give them a gift to she and her new husband, or he and her new wife. And there are ways to structure these assets going into a trust and having the trust loan it to the couple so that we're protecting those assets for your child and really, in the end, what you've built for all those years. So if there is an accident or there is a divorce, that the assets that you have put in trust for your child remain protected inside of that trust as well. It's also conversations that we need to have with our children as they evolve in their romantic relationships about the ideas of prenuptial agreements. We have clients that have said, you know, John, we feel, and you all on this call have said this, you know, that it may not be romantic. And the answer is there are elegant ways to present this so that the parties can agree. We're not talking about the husband and wife-to-be worried about their divorce. We're saying mom and dad have assets that will flow down to this child that we want to protect from the new husband and the new wife in the end if things don't work out. These things are not designed to offend anybody, but just to talk about the realistic statistic that is close to 50% of divorces. So as we move forward on the financial piece, number five is knowledge is power. And on this piece, we want to emphasize that the sooner you get your children involved in the literacy education, the sooner we'll find ourselves in a position where they'll come to appreciate the assets they have. They'll come to enjoy watching it grow, and they'll come to jealously protect it as something that has been a gift for them, but also a duty to grow that and to compound it, not just for themselves, but to serve as stewards for their own children. So starting with financial literacy is a very, very important piece. There is no sooner a time, we believe, that when you're on with your financial advisor, when you're on with your property manager, when you're on with your insurance people, when you're on with your estate lawyer and your income tax professional, to reach to your children and to say to them, this person is an important relationship in our family. If something happens to your mother and me, or to your father and me, these are people you need to count on and to trust. Long before my mother-in-law tragically passed away, I remember her taking my wife's hand and walking her through all the properties that she had. She had no expectation that she would leave this life early, but she showed her the properties, and they were humble lots in northern Portugal, but she would show her these pieces and said, here are the dynamics. This neighbor is doing this. This neighbor is doing that. You've got to watch this one as they cross the fence. Here is where you collect the rent. And we were old enough to know that this was a very, very prescient and critical moment in the relationship for Rose's mother to share that with us. We owe that to our children, and we owe it to our advisors. The sooner that they're involved, the better in these matters, because as we never know when our time is to leave this earth, but we also want our children to see that this group of people, this group of advisors, are critical to our success, and that you need to know that as well. How often have we seen when the patriarch or matriarch leaves the family, leaves the earth, and the money goes to the children now move to another financial advisor? How could my parents' advisor, you know, the old ancient folks that they were, really have smart people? Well, the answer is that's how they got there, child. Your parents got there with those advisors. But it's incumbent upon the advisors and the parents to take their child's hand and say, here are my top quality people, and I'm counting on you to work with them. Next, no substitute for hard work. So encourage your high school age children to get a job, to start their own business, to make money during the summertime. This goes back to this very important point, which is it may be harder for the parents to have their children in a position than it is for the children. And just this past week, we were with dear friends and clients, and the client said, I wanted my son to get a job as a dishwasher the same way that I had during my summer and have him appreciate the value of the hard work. But guess what? We're in the middle of a very important social event, and they're not giving him off, and he may have to quit the job to get off in order to come to the event. And he truly struggled with whether or not he should have his child stay in that position and miss the family event or quit the job. And to his credit, his child missed the event, and it was a giant inconvenience, but he said, if I don't teach our children now the importance of owning a commitment and accountability and responsibility, how can I expect them to do that later in life? His name is Joe, and he always thinks about people beyond just himself, and this was a perfect example. So number seven is a word to the wise: identify the advisors to be trusted. And so this goes back to the point we just said 2 points ago. In particular, know that there are one or two people that truly are the ones that you're accountable to and that are accountable to you. And that may be a group to start bringing into meetings. So as you know, for years, once your child turns 18, it's at that point that they're legal adults. And so we need to put together health care documents and powers of attorney. Those documents being executed now tell that child you're an adult. And you're now giving that responsibility to your mom and me, or to your dad and me. So long story short on that is involving them in certain advisors. When these clients leave here, these 18-year-olds, we say, we are now your counsel. Count on us. Here is our card. Your first call when there's a crisis should be to your mom. Your second call should be to us, to your mom and dad. And your second call to be us. So that they feel that they are trusted people at a very, very young age. All right, as we move on, number eight is failing to plan is planning to fail. So plan for the assets to be passed on. The question is, when do we discuss the passing on? And when do we tell our children? So some of our brightest clients and equally most affluent are working extremely hard to not indicate to their children what kind of net worth they have to their credit, right? The tall blade of grass gets cut first. Keep the children humble and hardworking. That being said, the wealth continues to exist. The barn continues to be filled with the golden stalks of hay. So what can we do? And the answer here is, for sure, we want to be respectful of moving assets into protected entities for the children and then deciding when it's time to let them know. As you know, in the trust that we've put together for your children, we'll invite the children on as a co-trustee, typically when they're 25. They'll sit in the passenger seat of the armored vehicle and watch the driver and participate in navigation, but no decisions would be made without the driver. In that respect, it is critical to know that at some point we will then hand the reins over to your child, and that's usually in their mid-30s. That time can change. Many of you have said it shouldn't be earlier than 40. Others have said it shouldn't be later than age 30. And that can evolve as we watch our children mature into productive adults. So I finish by saying on this piece, planning should be put in place. Deciding when to integrate your children into the planning is a different piece, but it should be an integration as opposed to a wholesale immersion initially. It is what happens to children who probably started with family malfunctions to begin with when they went into performance in Hollywood and so forth. But the injection of money at a very early age is a reason why too often there is a failure of these people to protect the money and to protect themselves. It's often tragic. So the slow and steady process of continuing to open up the sky as to what the child has always proven to be a much more conservative and effective approach. So number nine is know when to say no, to help your child think through what they're doing when they're asking for money. Knowing when to say no is, we've talked about, when your child is asking you for money and how to be balanced. It is a very, very, very hard job to do as we balance having new money, working very hard, and more than anything, wanting it to benefit our children, but balancing it against what's best for them long term. However, part two is now what happens when our children are asked for money, when our children are the ones that are asked to do all the driving or all the enjoyment of the family compound or to pick up dinners. We have raised our children, as you all have. You have not achieved the success you have because you have been stingy or not generous. And so generosity is both an important moral precept, but it is also wound up doing great things for individual success. So when our children see us paying for dinners for friends and for parents and cousins and nieces and nephews, it's easy for them to see that we are generous, so should they. But it is very, very dangerous when their friends, who may not have the same good intentions, and our children who have not developed discernment, they must be very, very careful as their friends may seek to both ask for money or for favors that are supported by a financial obligation. Number 10. Preparation is the key to success, So keeping documents fresh. It is important for you all, as you've done, is to set up trust for your children so that we follow the rule, which is part one, is you've worked really hard and given your children values and taught them the importance of living a full life that is not overshadowed by affluence. Number two is that you're giving them assets to get them started in life. But number three, and we've always said, is the gift of having it in a protected vehicle is as important as the gift itself. It is as important as raising our children with the proper goals and moral structure in mind. We hope that the trusts have the least amount of need. It's there more as a protective measure because we've done our work raising the children and helping them financially. So I will finish with a quote from Warren Buffett, who said many years ago, rich people, and I paraphrase, should be leaving their children enough to do anything they want on this earth, but not enough to do nothing. And I would submit to you that that number is variable, and so much about how much we give to our children is about how we're raising them. Are they hungry to change the world? Are they prepared to do things with no remuneration and no gain because they know they're bettering society and the community? Are they now developing sophistication so that they know how to manage the asset they've had and sophistication so that they know how to protect those assets from others? The job is not easy. And I finish by reminding us how I started this call, which was when one of our clients' parents said, you know, John, raising children in high, high affluence is not easy. I think many who have no experience, like all of you on this call, would completely disagree that should be the easiest. But it's not an easy task.